So you may have noticed when we discussed the subquantum realm and how an appreciation for the absolute certainty that there is mass and energy smaller than the quantized packets we've confirmed are the lowest measurable relative components that make up our electromagnetic radiation and our world as we know it. Standard models of physics as we know it. And so the concepts of a wave-particle duality and a probabilistic wave function, they actually are predictions of a subquantum realm. When you have a subquantum realm where there are waves of energy, particles and mass and energy moving in waves at scales that are that we cannot yet measure, far below that of, say, the electron neutrino or the any scale factors we can currently measure. But if mass and energy was there, there's a lot of predictions that we've already explained. We would predict that space-time would bend to the will of mass, and we see that. We predicted a probabilistic wave function as particles in motion could deviate off their intended paths due to subquantum attractions and repulsions that are going on that we can't see, causing these particles to move out of a predicted path and thus giving us a probabilistic wave function. We'd predict also due to this probabilistic wave function and the fact that there are interactions occurring below the measurable scales we can see, we would predict superposition and tunneling, where tunneling is a special case scenario of superposition, basically. I believe superposition has been misused and misunderstood. Those that really do truly understand superposition understand that a particle is not in two places at once. It is not in two states at once. It is, in fact, in one or the other. It's just not necessarily able to be determined until the wave function collapses, because prior to a wave function collapse, you have energy in motion, and upon a wave function collapse, you have a measurable particle. So attributing properties of a particle to energy in motion doesn't make sense. We know the moment that we interfere with nature behaving naturally, the interference pattern disappears. So if you're doing anything related to a double slit experiment or similar, and you have the potential for sub-quantum interactions to cause the predicted path of nature to deviate, then we can have localized realism still making sense until you start talking about spooky action at a distance and entangled particles and the nature of whether or not there are hidden variables. So although everything that we've seen, and including the most recent Nobel Prize winners, 2022, there does appear to be a violation of Bell's inequality. There does appear to be either non-locality or non-realism. Since we're willing to accept nothing can move faster than the speed of light, then one interpretation of everything, and the most popular one right now, is that the universe will present itself through observation, whereas I believe the universe actually presents itself through the macroscopic interactions. It's only if we get involved at the tiniest scale factors, not taking into account what we can't see, that we then have to make any sort of interpretation of what the collapse of the wave function is telling us. Instead, if you're not looking at that tiny microscopic, sub-microscopic scales you can't measure, we see the macro world drives the collapse of the wave function. Sure, we can have superposition and thus tunneling and a probabilistic wave function, but we can still have the macro world, chemistry and biology and physics as we know it, driving the normal collapse of the wave function. When the energy condenses out of a wave into a localized point, slowing down below the speed of light and taking on mass. If we were to accept, again, the observer effect coming into play and thus invalidating conclusions drawn from experiments that violate Bell's inequality or the double slit experiment, when we don't see a interference pattern, we need to take the conclusions drawn with a grain of salt, because the results of the experiment are tainted. You can look at it however you like, but the observer effect is an actual scientific problem where observing something can cause a deviation from, let's say, the natural state of nature. And the natural state of nature is the macro world is energy moving in waves, vibrating at certain amplitudes and frequencies to produce the particles we see at a point in time where it requires a confinement of energy or slowing down below the speed of light to take a picture or an observation of it. A moment in time. You know? Otherwise, if nobody's looking at it, you still have waves of energy in motion. And whatever they're collapsing, it is the building blocks that are basically controlling the atoms that in turn make up the molecules and elements and everything that are building blocks of everything we see. But those atoms, with the electrons that are sharing orbits, per se, these probabilistic orbits, they create stable atomic bonds because the majority of what's going on, regardless of the fact that it's probabilistic, it's still behaving according to the laws of physics as we understand it, where it gets shared between orbits, between atoms, and thus creating one of the types of bonds that further create molecules and elements and everything. So I feel we've read far too much into the collapse of the wave function, because I believe there is another way to interpret quantum mechanics and John Bell's inequality and the test done recently, but awarded in 2022. And that is, energy moving in waves will move in spherical waves wherever possible. It will have momentum in a specific direction, but it is still attempting to emanate outwards in spheres of influence, because that's what every pocket of space-time does. It is limited in its exposure due to its relativistic momentum, carrying it in a general direction, so it's only able to really deviate a little bit up or down or left or right or side to side. You know, it's not turning around backwards. That's not happening. It's being interacted with at subquantum scales we can't measure and moving it from its originally intended path. If it wasn't for a subquantum realm, we would not need renormalization in Feynman diagrams, and we wouldn't need virtual particles in Feynman diagrams. The fact that we have both virtual particles and renormalization in Feynman diagrams is almost a proof of a subquantum realm. But if that wasn't enough, then we should be able to suck every piece of energy and mass out of a vacuum and still measure those points in time where a culmination of subquantum waves of energy become visible at our scale factor. When the energy is consolidated enough and stable enough, it will become a particle. If not, it's going to appear and disappear, just like the vacuum energy that we have measured. So we need to accept that it was a mistake to call our quantum fields elementary and instead accept our quantum fields are created by something. They are not elementary. They are created because of energy and motion, vibrations of energy at certain amplitudes and frequencies, produce particles through what they call the quantum fields, but they're really, it's all the same field. It's a field of energy, and it's the amplitude and frequency combined. String theory, I think, gets pretty close to showing us how the vibrations of energy manifest through quantum fields, and those quantum fields are all one field, just interactions between the different types of culmination of energy that we see as particles. And I believe they collapse at the point in time that they are required to either slow down below the speed of light to take on mass or to try to capture a moment in time. You know, any attempt to capture a moment in time, you're not going to catch a wave of energy. You're going to capture, you know, as best as you can this potential false collapse, but it may not necessarily even be a collapse at all. It might just be the attempt to freeze a moment in time to capture it for recording purposes that forces it to slow down below the speed of light or at the speed of light or technically a hair slower, potentially, because of the processing time of capturing an image. A measurement, whatever it is, it's creating that collapse away function. So it is an observer effect and taking that out of the picture, reducing the conclusions drawn from anything involving the observer effect and the influence on quantum mechanics no longer requires spooky action at a distance, because there are in fact hidden variables, and our attempts to prove otherwise are actually invalidated because we are relying on an inequality that's not true. The 2.8 is greater than 2, and it's the right number because there are hidden variables. I wish I knew the math well enough to somehow prove it if there was in fact I don't know. I'm rambling on now, so I'm gonna finish up here. But that's all I had to say about the collapse of the wave function. Although I do think there was something else I did want to touch on. I'm not even sure I got to it. It's funny how I start a podcast with an idea of touching on a topic. I touch on 3 or 4 related topics and skirt around the issue, and then completely forget what the main topic is until after I remember days later. But I think I got it mostly. Okay, have a good one. Cheers. Live long and prosper. May the force be with you. 42. So I guess this needs to be said. There's a lot of different pieces to my combined and cohesive theory of everything. There are parts of it that I feel are almost unquestionable. The logical conclusion leaves very little alternative for nearly any other logical answer. So something like a infinite time, infinite space, an infinite number of separate nested pockets of space-time, infinite mass, infinite energy. Those are components that I'm almost certain of. The reason for the creation of our universe, what came before our universe, and the reason for dark energy. Unequivocally, they all fit a puzzle that fills so many of the observations that we otherwise can't answer. Then there are things that are very likely, although I can't necessarily say they're 100%. So the next thing's under 100% out of all my different theories. Maybe we go down to 95%. And at 95%, I believe the subquantum realm the reason why space-time bends to mass, the reason we have a probabilistic wave function, wave-particle duality, superposition and tunneling, are all due to a sub-quantum realm. The reason for renormalization and virtual particles and Feynman diagrams, and the reason for vacuum energy we can measure, is a sub-quantum realm that momentarily concentrates just enough to break through into the quantum realm as a quantized amount of energy, but not stable enough to stay there. And so I'd put that at, you know, 95, 96, 97% likelihood. That's also true. Then we dip down into those things that are maybe a little bit less possible. My explanations for dark matter, I've given three potential things that may work hand in hand to define dark matter. I may only put that at about 80, 85%. Each one maybe with different variances between 80 or 90% of likelihood in my mind. And they all offer experiments that can help prove or disprove any of the different ideas I had. So the reasons for dark matter, I believe they become a little bit lower. And then I guess at the tail end of the theories that I've presented, would be the potential for the succession of nested pockets of relatively pressurized space-time, mass, energy, heat, radiation to continue far below our quantum scales and far below Planck scales. I'm fairly certain, maybe 79%, just a hair under 80% maybe, of the likelihood that there must be mass and energy no matter how far you zoom in. You can never stop zooming in small enough. I mean, there's limits to what you can see because of the physics that controls what we are even possibly able to see requires photons. And so things technically smaller than photons, significantly smaller, you know, I don't know how we see them or measure them. That doesn't mean they're not there just because you can't see it. But the correlations that I've mentioned that would happen if not only was there a subquantum realm, but that subquantum realm had its own subquantum realm at far, you know, scale factors far below we could measure, and that subquantum realm had its own subquantum realm. Just like there is a never-ending parent frame of reference, because there can be no final parent frame of reference, then in theory, you know, infinite regression is a corollary to believing in an infinite multiverse. If you believe infinite time and you follow the steps, you connect the dots, you start with infinite time, never having a first second, never having a span of time without a span of time before, we can have relative time relative to us that had a relative beginning, but that relative time relative to us still had a span of time that preceded it. And so if you start with the premise of that single truth, that there can be no first second, and build from there, we extrapolate, interpolate, whatever you want to call it, infinite time begets infinite space, because space-time is interwoven. Infinite space-time begets infinite energy, which in turn begets infinite mass. So it becomes evident if you begin to contemplate an infinite universe. It really could not have any other structure than an infinite succession of parent frames of reference going inwards and outwards. And so if that were true and you had civilizations able to colonize their entire visible universe for billions and trillions of years, there would be a rays set up on the outside of their visible universe, pointing outwards. Huge rays, trying to scan or see or hear or maybe broadcast. And so we would predict those potential sounds or electromagnetic waves in some way coming from below Planck scales being aggregated in the same way that thousands of flashlights can aggregate to actually break through a Planck scale at a subatomic realm. So I believe that's why we have tinnitus. I believe you can go to anybody listening to this right now could go into their own room, in a quiet room, and focus on listening to both ears separately as best as you can in the quietest room possible. And in a very brief time, most people will hear sounds. Some people can't stop hearing these sounds, and it's called tinnitus. And for everybody that I just gave tinnitus to, I apologize. But and if you don't think about it, and you phase it out, you focus it on everything else you're hearing and not those noises, the brain can kind of do that, and people with tinnitus have difficulty not hearing all of that noise. And in particular, some people hear it louder, longer, and so I had recommended some type of experiments that could be done using the greatest listening devices possible, but there has to be some form of noise suppression that's going on. I don't know what the exact technology is. I've tried to research a little bit, haven't made great headway, but I believe there has to be some sort of noise suppression going on at the deepest levels in order for microphones to work. And so in theory, we've been hearing alien communications since the earliest of times. We just didn't recognize them, and we came up with ways to filter them out. Because there has to be ways to make hearing far, far better, in theory, than the human ear. But I don't know if we know. Like, I guess we'd have to simulate a human ear to see if it's even potentially possible. I mean, what I'm saying is the tiny little anvil and hammer and whatever it is, the little tiny bones of the human ear that are able to vibrate, and if the sound is coming from inside our ear, from atoms within our tiniest eardrum bones, then it would, I don't know if we could judge how well the human ear can hear, if it can hear those and you can't hear them outside. But in theory, there should be a way mechanically or electronically to achieve far, far better hearing than the human ear and not filter it out. So if they can do that now, if they can focus like multiple microphones on a single block of carbon, cold carbon, you know, take carbon, make it cold, and get your best microphones listening to it. If we don't hear any, what sometimes they call feedback or noise or whatever it is, then I was wrong. It's not causing tinnitus. And I'll accept that it is, tinnitus is not caused by alien communications. Okay, but let me point out, and the reason for this whole podcast has really been to mention that it doesn't disprove a never-ending succession in smaller matter. If there is another periodic table at a lower atomic level, so far smaller than Planck scale, and then below that, another periodic table, even smaller than that, time moving so fast for them compared to a second of our time, because of, you know, general relativity, and they're moving through space so slowly that their time is going to be much faster at their scale factors. But then I would think that the number of nested levels between their atomic level and our Planck scale has to be tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of levels, at least, if not even a million levels, who knows? I don't know. But I don't think that you're going to have other galaxies and universes above Planck scale. I think above Planck scale, and above our quantum scales at a minimum, there can be subquantum mass and energy. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are like little galaxies. I believe the little galaxy structure and solar system, I mean, a planetary system structure, stars and all that, are far, 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 far removed from Planck scale. And so it would be an incredible feat to be able to produce signal strength in an array that can break through Planck scale and be heard by a human ear. I accept that it is so unlikely, but that's what I'm saying. It has to be arrays of super type of things being sent out at the very edges of a universe, trying to see what's out there. Not knowing they're inside an ear, but just trying to either reach out or look out. In some way, we hear it. And if that isn't proven, and if the best microphones we have that are far, far better can't track this feedback or capture it and hear it, it doesn't negate the likelihood of an infinite succession of smaller pockets and infinite regression. It just means that they're so far removed from our Planck scales that their devices, even in large, vast arrays, could not be heard by our ear. And tinnitus is caused by something else. But when you really focus on how tinnitus works, there's such a background noise of a constant noise. And then there are the occasional longer tones and some of the really rare longer tones. Once every week or two, if you really focus on your ears and didn't do anything else, maybe even once an hour or two, you may actually get a long enough tone of 8 to 10 seconds. Sometimes they last 20, 30 seconds. They're loud, they're long. And all of the longest ones, they don't just stop. Well, some just stop. Some just stop. Some just fade away. It's weird. Sometimes they fade away. Sometimes they just stop. You know, if it was the same process internally to cells that would cause it, they would both sound similar in how they ceased to make that noise in your ear. If it was external to your head, both ears would hear them in sequence, but both ears are listening to totally different symphonies. Okay, but again, if it turns out that tinnitus is not caused by alien communications at a subatomic scale, it doesn't negate the almost certainty that you could continually zoom in smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller in a never-ending succession and never hit the smallest piece of time, piece of matter, piece of energy, piece of space. You'll never see the smallest collision. You'll never see the smallest pocket of space-time, smallest amount of light or heat. Because there is almost certainly a never-ending succession to it. Accepting the infinite nature of space-time allows so many of these other mysteries to all make sense. And as I've stated, I believe some of my theories offer 100% likelihood with evidence to prove it. And then they back their way down. So maybe I have to move dark matter below my reason for tinnitus. I would say I'm fairly certain for the reason for tinnitus. My answers for dark matter, until somebody does the experiments for me, I can't say. So there you have it. There is my prioritized list of what I believe the most likely to the least likely of my different corollaries within my theory of everything. Okay? Cheers. Have a good one. Live long and prosper. May the force be with you. 42.